Welcome to Screen Tone Club, episode 24. We are recording on the 12th of May, 2019, for release on the 14th of May, 2019. Both myself and my wonderful co-host, Mr. Andy Hanley. Say hi, Andy.
Hello.
We are both full of pizza and so about to fall into comas. But before we fall into comas, we need to do the most important thing possible. Talk about manga. Yes, manga. The spice of life. The jeu de vivre that keeps us going. Or at least keeps us buying digital books and then reading them in a short amount of time. This is your...
The topping on your cultural pizza, I was going to
Ooh,
say.
Ooh, good one. I like it. I like it. Oh, dear. Or it's the surprise filling in your calzone. How about that? God,
that works too.
Talking about that, I was sorry. I very quick holiday talk. I went to Trieste on holiday and I had a pizza where it basically had half the pizza folded over. So it was like a partial calzone. And inside that folded over bit were just giant chunks of horse meat as well as like a slab of ricotta, which nearly destroyed me. Hence why I'm sound somewhat groggy is because I'm still trying to sleep off eating half a kilogram of ricotta.
It's just, your body is still just trying to figure out, how do I digest this? This is not a thing that a human body should need to deal with.
Oh, man, no, it's totally given up trying to digest it. It's just figuring out where to put it. It's like, well, we got to put this cheese somewhere. You know, maybe we'll put it in his butt or something. Who knows?
So our new transhumanist future where we just become part pizza.
Oh, God, don't. I'd eat myself. Anyway, this is your fortnightly look at manga, where we sometimes talk about food, weirdly enough. Manga is in food. We announce our series ahead of time so you can read ahead and you can join in if you so wish. We have some interesting titles to come today, including one very long-lived and well-beloved series and one slightly newer from a new entrant in the publishing game of the old manga. If you like what you hear, you can join up to our Patreon, where for a mere $1 a month, you can frankly support us and keep the lights on, but also you get a bonus episode every month. Our most recent one, we went back and slayed the filthy light novel Dragon once more, which was good fun, all in all. Honestly, now I'm away from it and didn't have to read it anymore. It was a good fun episode, reading Do You Love Your Mum and her two-hit multi-target attack. I've already forgotten the title. It's taking a toll on me. But more importantly, on the Patreon side, shout-outs. Those who give us a silly amount of money get to have their name on here. So thank you very much to Rob Jessup. As mentioned all previously, it's helping keep the lights on and the hosting paid for. Regardless, moving on to the main part of the show, we have returning champions. I don't have anything to catch up on because, quite honestly, I haven't been reading manga really for the last week because I've been in a foreign country. Do you have anything you want to touch on, Andy?
No. Likewise here, I had a shocking realization, like literally this afternoon, that I'm now several chapters behind on Promised Neverland.
Oh, so, man.
Well, I need to get back on that train quickly.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that I think I've talked about this before, where I'm starting to give myself selective amnesia with the Shonen Jump titles, so I like almost forcibly forget that I have the subscription. So I then, when I remember, have three or so chapters to catch up on, which is kind of the nice amount of content to kind of sup on, instead of being like, you know, fiending for 18 chapters every week and then just wearing yourself out.
That is probably the way to do it. I suspect I'm kind of like subconsciously doing that myself, because I've definitely done that with a couple of series,
especially
now.
If you Promised Neverland, because if you are reading it week to week, it still has cliffhangers, unsurprisingly, and so it wears your nerves down a bit, a wee bit. Dear. Cool. So, moving on to the main part of the show. If you don't mind, I'll take my pick first, Andy.
Yeah, please do.
So, first is my pick for this week, which is Maiden Railways. This is now our second week running where we have the word maiden in the title of one of the series we're discussing. Sadly, the streak also ends here. This is by Asumiku Nakamura, who also, actually, as it turns out from reading background information on it, did Utsubora, which in a previous lifespan on a different podcast I talked about, which was released in a one-volume banger by Vertical, and now the pseudo-successor to Vertical, at least in some regards, Denpa Books, put out Maiden Railways. It's a one-volume sort of one-shot element made up of seven distinct chapters, all of which are kind of romance-slash-love-slash-emotional stories taking place on a single train line in Tokyo. which is hella long, as it turns out, and also weirdly intense. And so it kind of plays around with stories taking place, if not, you know, on a train or on this train line, then in the general vicinity of this train, or trains in particular, in general, as it were. You have sort of breakups where people are sort of coming to terms with what's happened at a train station, usually involving loud shouting matches down their phone, which once I realized it was happening a lot, kind of I couldn't stop looking at, because the whole overheard loud conversation plot trick kept happening. But no, it's basically a rather sort of fly on the wall style situation of you seeing these people having their various love lives collapse or crush together in the scene and surroundings of this train line, and how that kind of factors into their lives. It's not a perfect sort of third person perspective. You are usually hovering around a third party who managed to get sucked into the orbit of what's happening. And I don't know why, but for some reason I had it in my head that this was like a Yuri title. I don't know why. It has like a Yuri storyline for sure, but it's generally just around relationships. And I must admit, like, it kind of, the quality, at least for myself, varies wildly between the different chapters, usually in how much I get invested, and kind of get jumped into the storyline. There's one about, like, going to a bakery that has a model train set, which was, it was nice, but also at the same time kind of felt very strange when it came to trying to have a conclusion and jump to the shark, as it were. I can't think of a phrase involving model trains that I can compare with jump the shark, but at least for myself, I feel like a lot of it, you know, it's all very case of like everything's like a 30 to 40 page like short story, with a little sort of ending, sort of little tincture at the end, kind of tie it all together. But the main thing was that I kind of couldn't really get into any of the stories, because a lot of the time I was trying to grapple with, or at least kind of involve myself in the emotional turmoil of this happening. You know, it didn't really kind of grab me in that regard. Before I go too much further and yamble too much, what did you think of this, Andy? Did you get into it? Or more than I did?
It sounds like I did. Yes. I mean, again, I'm kind of with you. Like my response was very varied, dependent on the story. Like there was a couple that definitely passed me by pretty intensely. Like, I mean, the second short story in particular, called "He Lives in Illuda."
Oh, that one, yeah.
Like that story just really kind of struggled, because it seemed like it was never able to kind of set up or build up any of its characters to the point where you cared about them. Like, I mean, to me, most of these stories were pretty good at kind of quickly and succinctly putting its characters forward on the page to the point where you at least kind of invested in them somewhat, or kind of got a decent feeling for who they were and what they were about. And that particular story was kind of one that fell flat because it failed to do that. And then there was also, I think it's like the penultimate story that kind of ultimately involves kind of suicide and has this weird supernatural twist, that like that one fell really flat for me, because I think at the end of the day, it kind of just washed over like the importance of the things that had happened and just kind of shrugged them off in this really weird way that kind of felt at odds with the subject matter that it was tackling. Mm. So like there were definitely a couple where I was just like, I'm just not really into this. But that aside, actually, all of the other stories I really enjoyed in some shape or form. Like I felt like every story did a pretty good job of kind of, you know, given me a character, given me a reason to kind of care about them or empathize with them or kind of get to like them in some shape or form. Mm. And yeah, like most of them actually kind of worked out pretty well for me. Like they were either kind of like fun or interesting. And weirdly, like the one you mentioned in particular, like Severin Thursdays, I don't know what it was about that story, like whether it was just kind of like harking back to my own childhood of being like into model trains for a while, or what it was about that, but there's something about that story that actually really touched me. Like I kind of got to the end of that and kind of like found myself welling up a bit for reasons I couldn't quite explain even to myself. It's just like there's something about this that just touches me on a fundamental level. So weirdly, like that was the most affecting of all the stories, even though it was seemingly like kind of the most whimsical in some ways, but overall I like the vast majority of them to a decent degree.
Yeah, I feel like it depends from story to story. The first story with the main character who is a pickpocket works really well because it jumps you into the character really effectively, and she is like accidentally involved in all the shenanigans that are going on and has the most dispassionate and kind of exhausted and wanting to get the hell away from it point of view, which works really well when you've got all these characters who are like just being colossal drama queens the whole time. And you know, like, she is trying to get the hell away from all this but has ended up ensnared because she can't really escape, which is a fun point of view, especially when she's, you know, just wants to get the hell out of there real fast. As you mentioned, Severin Thursday is a very good story. The one thing where that kind of fell flat for me is because it jumped me in really well with the whole like secret conspiratorial train set thing, but when it came to the blow up of the wife finding out, and it's like, oh, this went from naught to not fun very quickly, especially because this could be answered with, it's one of these things where you think, oh, if there was a microsecond of a pause before this became a conflict, it would have been diffused entirely. Like, if somehow the wife had not blown up as soon as she saw the train set, it's this weird thing about, oh, this was poorly handled by everyone involved, but it really shouldn't have been like this. And then the final one, as you mentioned, the penultimate one, the ghost story, spoilers kind of. But there's, I feel that one in particular has problems with its pacing, where there is because you start from the point of view of the person who is departed. The baton pass for me never happened. Like, I never saw the transition to the other female character who you're supposed to then carry on with. And, oh, you are the survivor of this. This is what's happening. And I was still with the character who was supposed to exit stage left, the ghost. And so it's a case of, oh, I was still involved in this, but I was involved on the side that I was not supposed to be anymore. Whoops. And it kind of left me feeling emotionally cut off, where I'm like, especially because it seemed to cycle around too many times for me with the whole bag thing, until eventually it's like, oh, okay, there we go. So yeah. But it was, yeah. Part of that, frankly, might have been me being a bit dense. I wouldn't put it past me, given that I've been a bit out to lunch.
I don't know. I definitely had some of that with that particular story as well. Like, it did feel like it kind of like tried to twist and turn a little too often, to the point where I think I kind of lost interest in what it was trying to do at some point. And then when it came back around to its big plot twist of like, oh, here's actually what it's doing, I was almost on board with it again. But then the way it handled that was very much just like, oh, well, you know, shit happens, let's get on with it kind of thing. And it felt like it very much made light of something that it perhaps shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting kind of, you know, one of the things I certainly get from, and pretty much all of the stories perhaps, or certainly the majority of them in this book, is they all feel like they could have been part of kind of like a greater work or something longer, you know. He lives in Iriuda, which I mentioned, like, I didn't connect with it at all, but it also feels like that would have been a really good final chapter to like a single volume story or something. Like, it kind of, you can kind of look at the building blocks of that story and say, yeah, you've actually got something really good there. And if you'd have had several chapters before that to build up each character and their relationships and kind of how they interact with each other, I would probably have just been like absolutely kind of rocked and brought to tears by like the ending of it. But because it's just this one shot, it doesn't have time to kind of build up that investment for that to work.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like there are kind of a few other stories. I mean, I think the Yuri story that you mentioned, I mean, you can kind of tell like the author themselves fell in love with those characters enough to give them like a little follow-up sequel of just, which I really liked, because I really liked the characters in that story as well. And I got to the end of that story and thought, man, I kind of want to spend more time with these two idiots. And then like you get another little chapter spending more time with them. And it's like, it still wasn't quite enough for me, but it's like, okay, me and the author were kind of on the same page of just like, yeah, these characters are kind of great. But again, like that felt like it, it almost felt like the author willfully wanted that to be a far longer kind of multi-volume work that maybe started from the point that is, you know, the Overpass Crossing story and then kind of, you know, built across several volumes.
Definitely. I feel like especially when they finally revealed the, like, the third character in that story, like the character who has passed by, it's like, oh, okay, this makes a lot more sense. And it almost felt like we were seeing like a slither, like a cut off slither of like an After Hours style story almost, which maybe that's just because After Hours is on my brain from wanting to finish it. But it does feel like there's a good story there, but also it's been, what it's showing is really good, but also very compressed. If anything, I feel like the two characters kind of getting together at the end of that chat story felt weird, really kind of weirdly rushed. And, you know, it's always been there, but at the same time, it's like, wow, you rebounded hard, didn't you? But yeah, it's also a good, interesting story. I mean, the characters are all interesting in it, and they all look, that's probably the one where the characters themselves look the most strikingly different from each other. And it kind of plays into the cast and, you know, the main female, the main female character you kind of follow with, is kind of very interesting. The baseball player lass is really fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, as you say, the he lives in Iruda story. I feel like the real story that exists there is the one it kind of tangents off of, which is the pair, like her best friend and the guy he dumped. And it's very clear by the end that they were like, she likes him. He is still, you know, and there's clearly a relationship there that is the real story that would be the actual long-running storyline that you would then follow. Is, okay, yeah, these two are going to be together, duh. Rather than this idiot who can't seem to get his clock in order and has a pink shirt. So, you know, it's kind of this, as you say, it's this thing where it feels like a sort of a cut-off sliver of a different story that could have had a lot more room.
I think that's always the difficult thing with short stories. It's like, you know, I don't envy anybody that tries to create these kind of like single chapter works, because it is incredibly difficult to make something that is perfectly encapsulated in that shorter running time. Like, you either end up with something that is too brief or something that feels like it should be much longer, and it's pretty rare to find something that kind of fills the space that it wants to perfectly in a way that you can put it down and be like, yep, okay, that was exactly what it needed to be. Like, there's a real art form to that that is tricky, and I think this book is actually a really good example of that, because it's got some strong stories, some strong works, some good characters, but yeah, you're often left kind of feeling like, I just wish there was a bit more, which in a way, like, for me was kind of like praise for it, that I kind of wanted to see more of some of these stories and these characters' lives rather than just the little slithers that we were given. But at the same time, when you know they are just one shots, it's also a little bit frustrating sometimes that you just want to see a bit more flesh on the bones.
Yeah, especially for me, I think it's a case where a lot of the resolutions felt rather weak, or, you know, very much a case of, oh, need to end this now, and so it has to end, like, again, the blow up with the Thursday cake shop storyline, where it felt like, oh, this doesn't seem real. And also that at least two of the stories end with, like, the solution to the problems being, well, actually, I know the timetable of this station inside out, and so here's how you can, like, head this person off. And it's like, this is excruciatingly nerdy. And then when you read the author's note, it's like, oh, they are excruciatingly nerdy.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, those moments were such obvious kind of, like, author self-insert moments of, like, well, actually, if you take this train and you take the 1054, then the express will take you this way. And it's like, those moments often, again, especially, I feel like the first story where got this pickpocket girl, like, suddenly she starts spouting, like, train times and the optimal train line to get. It's like, even as somebody who's on the trains as a pickpocket, like, this does not feel in character for you. This feels like somebody else has, like, possessed your brain for two panels to just, like, regurgitate a train timetable. And it's like, you know, you could create a character where that would be believable and you could kind of enjoy that, but whenever it happens across this book, and as you mentioned, it does happen a few times, it always feels just like author inserts itself into character's brain to spout train nerd stuff at you.
Yeah, it very much becomes a part where you go, who talks like this? Especially when it's like, you know, as you say, the pickpocket girl starts talking about different train, like, sort of engine models, and it's like, whoa, this went, I mean, you're correct, but it's not good or fun. And also, as someone who has gotten used to like railways in this country being kind of expensive and garbage, you have to reconcile with the fact that, wow, that would never work in real life, because you'd never make those connections and everything would be late. So it's one of these things that are like, oh yeah, Japan. But yeah, it does make it a bit strange when at least two of the stories end with like timetable fuckery. But yeah, I feel like this series, this volume though, does manage to have its cake and eat it, because the last like small micro chapter like kind of fills in one of the remaining characters and also provides a nice little bookend to all the stories. Like, it does the whole thing where it's like a safari of like this person like just interacts vaguely with the cast of all the other stories in an oblique fashion, and I'm a sucker for that sort of thing, because I like a good epilogue chapter where it's like so and so went on to college, you know, sort of nonsense.
Yeah, my reaction to that was like, I rolled my eyes, but I rolled my eyes with a smile on my face of just like, oh, of course you did this, but actually this is kind of cool, so sure.
Yeah, I love this dumb garbage response.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, also, the art looks quite nice. I mean, the first chapter looks kind of a bit gangly, like all the characters are very long and lithe and all legs and all arms, but it kind of settles down. Like, the hair always looks very nice, like everyone looks just disheveled enough where they've got like a few hairs out of place, but not so many that it looks absurd. So it looks kind of nice. You know, it, by limiting its scope of environments, it can kind of like display them nicely because they're in train stations constantly, and it kind of gives it that sense of place as a result. But yeah, it was At the end of it, I kind of came away being highly ambivalent on the volume as a whole. I mean, you know, it's a one volume work. It's seven short stories. It's not, you know, going to take up all your evening or whatever. But as I said, for all the various little bits and pieces and little picks and bits, I kind of came away somewhat shrugging to it, which feels like a shame. But at the same time, it's like, well, there's enough clangs here I felt enough like internal clangs when reading it that it kind of wore me out a little by the end.
I will say, like, I found myself enjoying it in the end. You know, it's not that like every story is a banger, but I certainly enjoyed enough of the stories to feel like I'd kind of gotten my money's worth at the end of it. So I had a pretty good time reading it in the end. And you know, personally, I think kind of if you're a sucker for those kind of sort of, you know, mostly romance led stories, and I always enjoy the kind of like, you know, strangers who end up kind of like, you know, just getting dragged into something on a train platform or in some kind of like public place, you know, I think it does a good job with that. So for the most part, yeah, I think I'd probably recommend it as something for people to read from my end.
I think especially if, you know, if you like that sort of serendipity style storyline, then this is kind of totally catnip for you. As I say, I think my personal sort of like complaint with some of it is a really lame kind of like, this would never happen because trains are not this useful or efficient sort of point of view, which is my own problem. But no, it is at the same time, you know, it got me invested enough that I cared enough to then start, you know, sort of carping. So yeah, it you know, it definitely got me in some regards.
And if nothing else, I feel like we have now learned that the way to save the retail high street is to put more railways in all shops, because clearly that is the way to bring people away from online shopping to physical premises. Because I would buy stuff from a cake shop that let me also play with model trains every day, so bring it on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've got to diversify nowadays. It's why you get farms that open farm shops and then a petting zoo and other bullshit. So, yeah.
Exactly. Put a model railway in your cake shop and your shoe.
Or put a petting shop in your cake shop. I don't know. Sod it. Cool. Okay. As a note, you can buy this from physically from Denpa. And also, the only digital storefront we've found so far has been Kobo. I know Denpa have been working on increasing their availability both physically in the UK and also digitally, so they're probably still getting all that stuff worked out because there's deals to make.
Yeah, yeah, because this seems to be another weird one where it's showing as kind of having a Kindle edition, but it is currently shown as unavailable if you tried to buy it from the UK. So I don't know whether, as mentioned on our Patreon members bonus podcast, like I had a similar issue with the light novel of a long name that I won't bother trying to remember as well, where like there was a Kindle edition, but it just wasn't available to buy. And Maiden Railways, for some reason, seems to be in the same status. So whether there's some Kindle shenanigans going on or what, I don't know, but it's a bit of a
yeah
one.
I think it's a case of trying to organize it. I mean, also from the Amazon point of view, their back end is a complete nightmare, so good luck. Okay, cool. So moving on to your pick, Andy, if you want to take it away.
Yeah, so my pick kind of followed in the wake of the sad news of the passing of Kazuo Koike, which made me realise that I haven't read kind of one of the seminal kind of much talked about manga that has kind of become a cultural touchstone. You know, it's had movie adaptations, etc. And that is Lone Wolf and Cub. So I figured I should probably make that right and at the very least read the first volume of it so that I can say I've read some of it, because I've never consumed it in any form previously. So, you know, what better time to fix it than now? And basically the story is effectively a man in the Edo gig economy, and he's a murder
delivery employee.
So more seriously, it's the story of kind of a ronin and who has a son, who are the titular Lone Wolf and Cub, and basically he works as an assassin for hire. And effectively it's a very kind of episodic work in this first volume, at least, where every chapter pretty much sets him up with somebody he's gotta go and off, and he goes and does it with son in tow, and quite often using said son as either a decoy or as part of his strategy. And I like a couple of chapters into this, I thought I really wasn't going to like it, because it felt very kind of basic and very simple. Like, it didn't really delve too much into kind of developing the characters or kind of the narrative of, you know, the circumstances of the assassination he was kind of getting involved in. It was a pretty simple, like, here are some people, here's our hero, watch him do some murder. And it's like, this is okay, but it's not really doing anything for me. And then I kind of realized, as this volume progressed, that actually that was pretty much okay as kind of like the setup to this series kind of back at the time that it was first published. Like, it sort of made me realize how much I know about Lone Wolf and Cub simply through like cultural osmosis, that I knew the basic setup. And so like these first chapters that were probably really important at the time kind of feel redundant like so many years later, where you at least know the basis of the story. Because once it kind of gets past those first two chapters, it spends a lot more time kind of setting things up. Like, it sets the scene and tone for each kind of assassination. It kind of delves a bit more into the circumstances of, you know, whoever's organizing said killing, whoever's on the receiving end of it, and so on and so forth. And it kind of finds its groove at that point, and, you know, every story feels a bit more fleshed out, and I found myself enjoying it a lot more at that point. Like, it, at the very least, it's a story, it's a manga that you can look at and you can see why it became the cultural touchstone that it did. Like, it definitely has all of the kind of story beats and the sort of, you know, the characterization and the setting and the mood that, like, it's sort of an obvious hit when you kind of read it and kind of look at it now. It's like, yeah, of course it's turned into a big deal and a long running series, because, you know, it just, it touches a lot of the right bases. Mm. And so, yeah, I kind of enjoyed it in the end. Like, you know, I'm not usually a big fan of kind of period stuff like this. It has to be something pretty special to really get my interest. But, you know, I enjoyed what I read. Like, it has fantastic action scenes. Like, it's really brutal and kinetic and fast flowing kind of from panel to panel. And, you know, sometimes across like two page spreads, like it really does good work when it actually gets to the brunt of its action side of things. But it also does a good job with kind of both its main characters and, you know, whatever individuals kind of turn up on a chapter by chapter basis. Like, it kind of, it builds interesting stories and interesting scenes. And I'm led to believe that it tries to be relatively historically accurate wherever it can as well. So it does feel like it has a certain amount of research gone into it as well. I kind of liked it. It was definitely a case of being glad that I read it, because, you know, I can certainly see, you know, why it's such a well-known name. But I felt like I got a decent amount of entertainment value out of it at the same time.
Yeah, I've read this before, because I read volume one years and years ago, because it, like, every manga shop and every bookstore will have like a few volumes that's knocking around somewhere, because it's been in print for so long. I mean, I was reading the digital version, which is just a straight scan of the 2000s Dark Horse release. And I mean, the first few chapters are it just setting up the very, very basic, as you say, like, just structure where, you know, it's like, oh, he has his baby. Why has he got a baby? And it's like, yes, we know why. Like, this is not difficult. Come on, get to the meat of it. And then, as you say, like, after about four chapters, I was totally much more into it, where I was, you know, the flow is there, as it were. I think the main victory it does, as you say, it tries to be slavish to the period with, you know, it does two things in particular, where one, it always errs on the side of cool things, where instead of just doing something in a mundane fashion, it will do it instead in a cool way, especially one that makes the main characters cooler, frankly. And also, a lot of the backstory and a lot of the exposition is, like, it's clearly been researched, and it clearly has its own internal logic. Whether it's historically accurate or not, I'm not qualified to judge. But the main thing is, it's internally consistent, but also perfectly optional. Like, it will get the exposition done and out of the way, and it will work on two levels, where it will tell you what needs to happen and who needs to get a sword put in them, but it will also then tell you the great long backstory and all the crazy machinations therein, if you are interested. But if you're not, you can totally just read it and go, okay, that guy's got to get a sword in him because he complicates the succession crisis of this clan. Okay, gotcha. And the thing that's kind of fun about it as well is that the main character has, like, his backstory is the final chapter in this, which is nice because it's a good place to put it for, like, and here's the deal of what's happened here, even though everyone talks about it because everyone knows him. And that then explains it, because, you know, decentralized power in the period, but also there was still a lot of reverence pointed upwards to the Shogun. And so the fact that people know who this guy is, or at least know of him, makes sense given the, like, lower communication level of technology at that point, you know, of Japan. But the main thing I like about it in that regard then is it explains a lot, but also, as I say, you don't need to know a lot. And also, a lot of the actual individual stories are not going to shape the entirety of Japan. It's all just idiot small tyrant landlords with their pokey ass little farms that they keep everyone under the thumb, or a gang of bandits who take over a resort town because no one bothers to go looking for them in the winter. And it's all that sort of, you know, shitty small town provincial, like, tyrant garbage. And so, you know, it's all dumb, and it has loads of human suffering sewn in, and it has loads of people who need to get a sword put through them, but it also makes it very clear that, like, the main character is above all their garbage, because, you know, he has cut the heads off of far more important people in his life before everything went to hell. And that's what kind of gives it this sort of almost like weird comparison here, but it feels at times not quite as much, but it feels slightly like Golgo 13, where it's like, this guy is operating on a completely different level. He doesn't care. He exists in your world, but doesn't care to subordinate himself to your rules. And you two can come into contact with him for a price. And then that's kind of the operating procedure that you get for the main character, whose name I've forgotten, although I did write it down. So,
yeah. I mean, I was gonna mention kind of the Golgo 13 angle as well, because it definitely kind of hits some similar notes, and he does have that ability to be kind of effortlessly cool in the same way that something like a kind of Lupin the Third, or even, I guess, you know, something like a James Bond can do when it's really kind of, you know, at the peak of its powers. And at times, you know, it feels very much of its time,
yeah.
But, you know, it definitely has that ability to just be like, ah, look, you know, look at this cool brooding guy and his kid just like murdering people. And, you know, there is a very simple pleasure to be had from kind of watching that. And it's kind of interesting really, because I feel like so many kind of other series that do sort of similar things put a lot of stock into kind of setting up kind of, you know, missions and kind of tasks like this in a very kind of strategic way, where it's like, oh, well, there's no way you can possibly do this because X, Y, and Z, and kind of lists the reasons why they can't do it, and then kind of follows through the machinations of how the hero, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, actually pulls it off. Whereas Lone Wolf and Cub really doesn't put too much stock in that. It kind of, or at least it doesn't kind of verbalize it a lot. It just kind of drops the problem in there, occasionally has somebody, one or two people saying like, well, there's no way one guy can do this, and then he just does it. And it doesn't really spend a lot of time kind of micro-analyzing how he goes about it. It's just like, he just goes and does the job. And it's kind of like, I think there's something almost refreshing about how simple it is in its handling of that. Like, it doesn't feel like it needs to overcomplicate it. It's just like, oh yeah, this guy is like incredibly talented at what he does, and you're just going to watch him do his thing. Like, don't ask questions about how or why. It's just how it works.
Yeah, I think it has that sort of go-go. It does both the good and the bad parts of go-go in some regards, where like, because he's just passing through, he is a drifter, like explicitly for someone who is, as you say, for hire, you know, he's like a sword stabby deliverer almost, with less terrible color scheming, where, you know, he is unmoored from all the different things, where you get these people just vomiting out a page of exposition explaining the plight, and he's just like, I don't care. Who do I stab? Like, what do you want me to do to make your problem go away? And the people are like, oh, how can you do that? It's like, I just do. Like, I just came through and stabbed the thing. What do you want from me? Like, I'm going to take my money and go away now. Although I wonder what the hell he does with all that money that he seems to accrue. Maybe he's sending it off to a nunnery or something. But one thing it does have, of course, is it, of the time of its creation, it has a lot of quote unquote very big asterisks strong female characters, like the prostitute he sleeps with to avoid getting stabbed, and it's very much a case of like, oh, he's a man above men, blah blah blah. And it's like, yeah, this is just like Golgo, where he just beds the single female character who exists in the orbit of the storyline.
Yeah, that definitely is one of those moments. It just kind of reminds you like who the audience is. But yeah, like I don't know why I didn't like kind of make the link earlier, but like in contemporary terms, there's always something a bit John Wick-esque about it. Like it's just very simple in terms of like, hey, we know what you want to see here, and, you know, we're just going to deliver this. And like you say, there's kind of like lore and backstory stuff and kind of, you know, stuff around the edges of it that you can certainly kind of engage in and kind of, you know, dig deeper into. But if you just want to see dude cutting people up, then Lone Wolf and Cub also has you covered.
Well, like John Wick, man, I want to see part three. But John Wick in particular, yeah, like, it hints at this insane world. Like, even in just the first one, it hints at this crazy bonkers world of contract killers and assassins and mafias, and like your titular main character does not give a fig about any of it. Like, he's out to kill this one motherfucker and he's gonna do it, and surprise, he does. And you know, it's the same sort of thing that happens in this, where people be like, how can you defy my lord and master, blah, and he's just like, I don't give a shit, I'm taking my baby stroller and fucking off. And he doesn't even say that, he just does it, he just goes. So yeah, it's real cool. Like you said, you mentioned it in one part, actually I want to get back to that, is the art, where yeah, you get some amazing spreads especially, and just really cool action that, it sounds weird, but like if you try to like assimilate all the individual panels, it doesn't seem to flow, but when you're reading it, it just goes. Like, you just skim through it and it all flows together, and you can almost like hear the clashes, you know. It's very, I've been playing Sekiro recently, so maybe that helps, but you can really feel the kind of the impact and also just how brutal the fighting is, because people just, you know, unsurprisingly, if you get cut with a sword in the stomach, bad shit happens to you because the human body doesn't really hold together that well when you compromise it like that. So it really works really efficiently. In fact, there's at least one case where someone like fakes being disemboweled to then go, haha, surprise, I just had these intestines. And it's like, oh God, what the fuck are you doing?
but yeah, like, it definitely flows really well, and like, even outside of the action scenes, like, the artwork still has a kind of a character and a kind of, you know, whether it's being brooding or foreboding or whatever it is, like, it's pretty good at kind of, you know, giving you that feeling of kind of like tone, and you know, there are times when it feels very dark and kind of almost claustrophobic, and there are other times where it feels very open and, you know, just like you're in this big kind of open countryside. Like, it's really good at having a sense of place on like a scene by scene basis as well. I feel.
It definitely feels like it has a really good idea of where it wants to put the camera and what the camera. I mean, I use this phrase a lot, something in different reviews you've probably noticed, but like where and how it sets up the camera of the panel. Like, you have one moment which is a bit daft, it's on its face, but where you have these like very sort of high shots looking down on the main characters, and then it transposes that into the eye of this eagle they have trained to use as a scout, and then the eagle flies off, and you think, okay, that's kind of daft, but also it works really well on the page when it's like the camera moving up and away from the main pair to this bird, and then you go with the bird to the handler, and then they appraise what's happened somehow. I don't know how the hell a bird reports in, but you get that sort of amazing use of the camera and its viewpoint and just what it shows you, like, you know, either very tight or very wide, and just how it shows you that. So, really good. One thing I want to say, actually, is, I don't know about, did you get this physically or digitally, Andy?
This is digitally, yeah, I read it.
Okay, same. So, was it just me, or, like, it may just be me, so, but the quality of the digital file kind of was bad, at least to my money, because, I mean, it had a lot of problems in the actual structure, where some two-page spreads were presented as a single image, which then made my tablet freak out because it would go from landscape to portrait, and suddenly I've got to reorient my tablet to see everything. And then sometimes two-page spreads are split up into two individual pages, portrait-wise. And also, yeah, the actual image quality itself sucked. And it really felt that the actual, like, color space was crushed quite intensely.
Yeah, I definitely had the same. Like, I kind of gave it a bit of a free pass of like, this is probably like a pretty old kind of like attempt to digitize this stuff, you know, because this is not a new manga, and, you know, it was probably pretty early in the kind of, you know, manga on digital platforms kind of era. But yeah, it definitely it could do with a second pass and a bit of a spruce up in 2019, because it feels old as far as a digital file can feel old.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a problem in particular, because like the actual physical releases were like smaller sized volumes that were quite dense. It was like almost like Bible sizing almost. So they were easier to carry, but also much more small in physical dimensions of the image. But that also means that I don't know what they did. I'm not going to presume, but the text is a lot higher resolution and clarity than the actual background image, which makes it really incongruous at times, which is also, as I say, is a massive shame, especially because the whole thing is very painterly. It's marvelously presented and depicted by Goseki Kojima, probably the most sensible of the people that Kazuo Koike partnered with. probably someone who actually helped rein his crazy nonsense in, if you look at some of his other works. But it just looks, it's all in grayscale, but it always feels like it's just crushing the color space down. So it loses some of the fidelity and some of the like actual, you know, just life of the image, which is a shame because I feel like I can tell, because like you look at the image and you think this should probably be a bit more lush than it actually is. Which is a shame. It's something that kind of nagged me a bit while reading it, which, as you say, there's a pass to be given by the fact that, one, it's a cheap release and a cheap in terms of cost release to you, the reader, but also, you know, this is a 2000 era release physically, like the actual like publication. So there's enough caveats there.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it would definitely be nice to see it kind of given another look, you know, so many years later, because, yeah, it certainly it feels its age in terms of how it's been digitized. I mean, luckily enough, to kind of not to the point where it ruins it completely, but, yeah, I kind of dialed into it at some point, but I definitely had that same thing as you did initially, of just being like, this just doesn't look right. And it took a while to just kind of get used to it, as it were, but it would be nice if you didn't have to.
Yeah, as I say, you get used to it, but also at the same time, the main thing that kind of annoyed me about it was that as I started to get into the series and, you know, as I say, the very liveliness and the great motility of the art, it's like, oh, this is a shame that it kind of looks a bit bad. It got easier to deal with, but also more annoying as a result. Which I mean, yeah, I'm not, for sure. It's easy to pick holes in all this stuff, but as I say, it is a shame. But yeah, I must admit, by the penultimate chapter, I was very much of the point of like, okay, I've read this for the podcast, I'm done. And now after the backstory chapter, I'm like, well, you know, it's 28 volumes long and that's long, but maybe I'll stick around for a volume or two longer just to see what happens.
I'm not sure whether I will read more of it or not. Like, I'm definitely not against the idea. I mean, ironically, because it ends with that backstory, that almost feels like quite a nice kind of self-encapsulated single volume as well. Like, you know, you get to see Mr. Lone Wolf Man doing his thing, and then you kind of get the one kind of outstanding quest of, like, how did he get here? And then once that's kind of answered, it's like, you know, I could leave this and be perfectly satisfied. But yeah, at the same time, like, there's definitely plenty more room to read more of that, so I certainly wouldn't be against the idea of reading a few more volumes.
Yeah, I think it's especially because once you get bedded into the setting and also the characters and just, you know, the lay of the land, as it were, you know, I feel a lot more comfortable just enjoying reading it. As I say, once I made the realization / came to the peace with the fact that all the exposition can be like taken or left, which is actually quite liberating in a weird way. It's like, oh, I see what's going on with this crazy storyline, or man, I have no idea, but it sounds important. So the Elliot Page is a dunce moment.
Yeah, but it's certainly, yeah, sometimes it's nice to have something that you can kind of read that doesn't require, you know, a lot of kind of deep thought or kind of reading between the lines, and this can definitely be one of those things of just like, oh, this is just cool, like, and that's, again, much like something of a John Wick ilk, sometimes that's just all you need.
Yeah, totally. It reminds me, I was going to say something, I've completely forgotten it was there, sorry, Jesus. Oh, sorry, that's it. It reminds me of Masamune Shiro in some regards, where, like, Masamune Shiro will go off on a tangent about philosophy or technology or electronics or something, and will just have, like, half a page to four pages just going, well, as you know, about this Sinto skin, and you're like, what? And then it just, you can basically glaze over for a bit, and you'll be fine, but you can tell that they put a lot of thought into it. Whether you, like, care about it as much as they do is debatable, but it is that sort of thing of like, why are they talking about this while doing the lesbian sex on a boat? God, Ghost in the Shell, damn. Oh. Anyway, but yeah, that's Lone Wolf and Cub. I ended up, yeah, as I said, I ended up quite enjoying it. Also, the volume's 300 pages, which helps. You get a lot of like murder for your money.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, was it like $2.99 on Comixology? So it's like you get a lot for you know, a lot for a little cash. So if you're looking for a decent chunk of reading at a cut down price, and as mentioned, like, you know, it's very much a cultural touchstone. So it's you know, it's well worth checking out even if you just feel like I should probably have read this just so that I can say I have. You know, it's probably worth your time.
It's very much a thing where you read it and go, oh, okay, I see why everything stole from this. Like, all good art involves thievery, as it turns out. Cool. So, yeah, that was cool. That was a good choice. So, what are you going to talk about next time? I have selected for next episode a series that I actually have all the volumes of and need to finish, but I wanted to use this as an excuse to revisit it. So that would be Girl's Last Tour, the post-apocalyptic pair of lasses in a Kettenkrad manga. Also got an anime semi-recently. I forget how long it was.
Yeah, so 12 episodes. I mean, I'm very good at
this. Okay, cool. Yeah, when was it? Like last year?
Year before last, I think it was 2017, late 2017.
I have zero ability to know when anime came out anymore. It's when someone mentioned, oh, Hamaha, blah, 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 decade ago. And it's like, oh, no, stop, get away, stop talking. Anyway, how about you, Andy?
Yes, so my choice is based on like kind of when I first got into anime and manga fandom. I was basically told two things. One, there will never be a Yotsuba anime. And two, nobody will ever release Saint Young Men in the West. And guess what? The second thing has happened now. So I have picked the first volume of Saint Young Men, which Kodansha are releasing, because it is going to happen, and it has happened, and the world is falling in, I guess.
Well, yeah, I think we can both agree that the world is, in fact, falling in. But at least we've got good manga to read. But yeah, I'm really excited to read this, because we watched those OAVs fit. Were they OAVs? I forget what they were.
There are OAVs and a movie, both of which are really good. So I'm definitely on board to check out the source material as
definitely.
Well. If
it even has even a half of the charm of the OAVs, then it's going to be good. So, cool. So, thank you very much for listening. This has been... So, thank you very much for listening. This has been your episode of Screen Tone Club. For more episodes of the podcast, you can visit our website, screentone.club. Also available, the podcast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc., etc. If you like the podcast, please tell a friend, have a little tweet about it. We've had some lovely messages from people. Andy is frankly in charge of the Twitter feed because he's way better at it than I am, but we have had some lovely feedback from people, including pictures of guinea pigs. So always makes my day when I see that. If you are feeling kind, you can leave us a rating or a review on your podcast feed thing of choice. That stuff always really helps with getting a surface to people. You can also tweet at us, as mentioned, at Screen Tone Club, one word. And you can also email us at show@screentone.club. For personal stuff, my name is Elliot Page. You can find me at Elliot Page on Twitter. And you can also find Manga Search, the online digital legal manga search engine, which is slowly coming out of retirement again, at mangasir.ch. And Andy, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Hannahs1979, although I should warn you that come the next weekend after this show goes live, I will probably be blitzing everybody with my hot takes on Eurovision, so be warned.
That's probably a good... Sorry. Oh, man, Eurovision, I completely forgot about that. Jeez.
Yeah,
I was
expecting
you to talk about European football, but no, it's Eurovision. Another European nightmare. So, thank you, everyone, and, well, good night.
Bye, everyone.